It's time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit, and bring forth real talk from real people about real news, providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation, all in a fast-paced hour.
Welcome to Viewpoint Presents. This is Malcolm Out Loud. You know, inside of a span of just 10 years, the United States has experienced two very different ideologies. Under the leadership of President Barack Obama, the United States was headed to a more partnership-driven, less leadership-driven world. Many would say a backseat approach when it comes to world leadership. A more global-driven agenda where, kind of look at it this way, America fit into a giant jigsaw puzzle of nations. Well, along comes President Donald Trump. Many would call him the disruptor. Well, he's elected and he does a 180 in his approach, positioning nationalism at the top of the agenda. You know, things you've heard like America First, or perhaps a slogan you've heard once or twice, Make America Great Again. Of course, it became as the MAGA movement, the MAGA movement. And many are saying this has really taken over the Republican Party, in fact. The MAGA movement may be a new version of a Republican Party. And at the same time, the Democrat Party may be more of a socialist, a liberal Democrat Party. Well, that's where we take the conversation today, friends. Globalism versus nationalism. I think it's a big conversation, and one that we need to have. Welcome to the show here on our panel discussion here, Colonel Jim Warshuk. He's a retired from United States Air Force. He's a career senior intelligence and special missions officer. He served as Deputy Director for Intelligence for U.S. Central Command and has worked on the White House National Security Council. Also joining us, Dennis Santiago. Dennis is a global risk and financial analyst. His subject matter expertise includes strategic warfare, asymmetric warfare, arms control, global stability. Both gentlemen are weekly columnists and vast contributors at America Out Loud. If you read a lot of Dennis's columns, you'll find he's a bit of an out-of-the-box thinker. Somebody takes something and takes a look at it in a different way. That's what we're going to do today here, friends, on this show here. When we take a look right now at the United States, at this very moment, are we more globalists or nationalist? Where are we right now at this very, very moment? More globalists, more nationalists? Dennis, start us off. What do you think?
Well, actually, the term that comes to mind when I look at the way the United States is acting at the moment is we are more imperialist, in that we are a world leader. We see the fact that globalism has been going on. We look at it from a dispassionate third party point of view, and we interact with it forcefully. You know, that's not the Barack Obama fit in with the bigger all the other puzzle pieces model that we had in the past, and it's not the insular nationalist model that some other people advocate for the United States, which is, you know, go back to just doing our thing and ignore what happens in the rest of the world. We're very engaged. And so in that sense, we are nationalistically global oriented in the way that we act. And that actually fits more the definition of a classic, imperial power. If you think of it that way, you know, my European friends always ask me the same question, you know, when are you going to get over your Etruscan phase and become Rome? And so Donald Trump, I think, you know, in the actions that he's doing and the way that he's comporting himself in the world as leader of the United States is, I think, very much exploring that very edge of things. Are we about to end the Etruscan phase of the United States of America and explore whether or not it is our role in this world to be an empire type power that brings order and rationality to this planet? Typically those kinds of things, you know, can last 900 to 1200 years. And are we ready for it is kind of one of the big questions that you have to ask.
You know, interesting when you say nationalism and the approach that you take of it made me think a little bit there, Dennis, because you're right in the sense that President Trump, it's not been a traditional nationalism campaign. I agree with you on that now that you say it that way. He sort of has a very prideful, patriotic, national appeal to what he's been doing, but at the same time, he is connecting the dots with world relationships. And a lot of that has to do with a lot of these key meetings and relationships he had out of the gate. It's almost like he took a look at the big picture before he even started. And when I say that, things like, you know, when the previous president left the office, Barack Obama, he had said to President Trump that the biggest problem you're going to have is North Korea. That's been documented now that they had that conversation and North Korea was going to be the big problem of the new president. Now, interestingly enough, President Trump met with a lot of the key players, China. He realized and recognized that if he was going to deal with North Korea, he'd have to get China into the picture. So he met with Xi Jinping early on at Mar-a-Lago, and he created that relationship. He met with Shinzo Abe of Japan early on. And it started a feud with North Korea that became, well, as many would say, laughable. It became very laughable out there, you know, the Rocket Man, all of this kind of thing. But looking at this right now, it was really eventful what the president did and how he did it. And where we find ourselves today is very, very fascinating. Colonel Warshak, when Dennis says, I hadn't thought of it in the terms of what he just put, the imperialism comment he just made, but the way he says nationalism, and we all know that's been President Trump's approach, but it's not a true nationalism. I kind of agree with that now because of the way he has built in these world relationships, not exactly an isolationism kind of approach that some maybe would have accused him of, you know, at time again. What is your take on that in this nationalistic view that Trump has taken in this kind of a turn? Because this is a big change from President Barack Obama and his administration. Jim, you have to admit these are two different approaches here.
Well, absolutely, and let me give a little explanation and also address Dennis's point about where he thinks it's going. He's exactly right, and Donald Trump had to take us to that level. He almost had to swing the pendulum back heavily to get the momentum to turn the country back to the direction that our founding fathers believed us to be as a nation. And that's kind of what it took. And the second thing, President Trump actually called Obama out and took on the big issues that Obama had failed to take on. And certainly that was North Korea, that was sitting down with China. His first international event was sitting down with 55 Arab leaders and basically showed them the way, and he had very high marks from them in their address with him. And now he's dealt a couple times with NATO, and we saw this past week how he reasserted America as the leader of NATO and as the vanguard of NATO at the same time. And you know, I addressed that in an article this week. He scolded NATO for their lack of contributions to the NATO budget, but at the same time, he didn't throw NATO out, as the political left said. He acted as the vanguard to protect NATO for the good of NATO to continue to serve as one of the greatest alliances. Now, from the standpoint of globalism and nationalism, certainly the political left has embraced globalism, and there's several types of globalism. There's justice globalism, jihadist globalism, market globalism, and political globalism. And what the political left, the Democrats, the establishment Republicans, certainly the Bush, both Bushes, Clinton and Obama, embraced a sort of political market globalism. And what Trump has done is brought us back to more nationalistic approaches from the standpoint of the basic fundamental definition of nationalism, talking about nationalism oriented towards developing and maintaining national identity based on shared social characteristics such as culture, language, religion, politics, and a financial system, and maintaining sovereignty and self-governance. And I like to call what Trump is doing is not necessarily a true nationalism, but a patriotic conservatism, because he's pressing patriotism more than anything else to bring the country together around the flag. We see him embracing the flag all the time, and he's doing that to bring back pride, which certainly Obama got rid of, on his apology tour and as he set the course over his last 8 years.
Yes, and Colonel, when you take a look at these past previous administrations, and you go back to Bush, as you say, Bush, Clinton, Bush, Obama, there was sort of a trajectory of the nation where we were sort of headed. It was a more global approach to things, really, than back to that self-pride and self-national preservation that America had been known for. In fact, you mentioned the what became known as the apology tour. If you think of that back then, there was a real big conversation going on. I remember talking about this often on national radio. It was in regards to American exceptionalism. And it became a big confrontational point. What was American exceptionalism? In fact, I remember Vladimir Putin taking out an op-ed in the New York Times to address his sort of his take on American exceptionalism and sort of damning it, if you will. You might recall that. And yet, you know, American exceptionalism had taken a hit, what those words meant. It was sort of paraphrased, Dennis, at the time, where, like, for instance, it was like, I think President Obama had said, well, listen, yeah, he was asked one time, do you believe in American exceptionalism? He was put on the spot. And President Obama had come out, well, yeah, I do. Sort of, yeah, I do. Yeah, sort of like Russian, exceptionalism, sort of like China exceptionalism, sort of like Venezuela exceptionalism. I don't know that there is such a thing, but you get the picture. And that's kind of how he put it out there. His idea was, again, to fit into this bigger puzzle as just another country. But that wasn't what made America extraordinary, Dennis. I mean, that was a different character. When Colonel says 180, back to that 180, and we were just talking about the approach, I think the nation, we can all agree, was headed down a particular path. Here along comes President Trump. Again, I'm going to call him the disruptor because that's what he is. And he changed this complete paradigm of all of these administrations going all the way back to really, as far as I can see, the first Bush at least. And he started to change the trajectory of the nation. And it's funny because often I've said on radio again in a national conversation that, you know, the pendulum in America has a tendency to swing. If we go too far to the left or too far to the right, it has a tendency to swing and it swings back. I don't think any of us could have predicted that a President Trump, the disruptor, would come into power in the way that he did. Had he not, and had he lost that election, would America as we know it, Dennis, would it have been lost forever?
No, it would have basically made the pendulum swing further. Do you know where the term American exceptionalism actually comes from? The term American exceptionalism was actually first uttered by Joseph Stalin, all right? Because back during Stalin's time, he was trying to organize what the communists call the International, which is, you know, a global governing body of all communist countries. And the American communists at the time had promised to deliver the United States to the next international as a country that was completely bought into communism. And they couldn't. The American communists failed to do so. It got Stalin absolutely into a rage, and he messaged the leader of the American Communist Party, who I believe these guys are kind of center up somewhere in the Chicago area, and basically said, I do not understand what this American exceptionalism is, that you cannot deliver your country to the next Communist International. You people are crazy. And he basically banned the American communists from ever showing up at one of the conclaves for that particular philosophy from that point on, and, you know, basically said, go away, you people are useless. That's where the term came from. And It's kind of funny the way we use it today that we forget that it was originally a derogatory term against American communists because they just couldn't do it. Now,
well, I can see that, though. Now, that's interesting, that bit of history. I did not know it was attributed to Stalin. And if that's true, I can see where they would think that it would be used in a derogatory mode, Dennis. You know, I mean, I can see that. You know, when we talk about globalism as a whole and we see what's happening with the European Union right now, there has been a move around the world to embrace this feel of globalism. It's taken over Europe. Europe has had a lot of challenges with migration out there, as well as we're having our own challenges here in the States. Very, very interesting what happens with the European Union and how that impacts America and how NATO fits into all of this. Let me tell everybody right now, Viewpoint Presents. So what you're listening to now is a pilot show. This is a show that will launch in the fall time. Viewpoint Presents will launch this September on America Out Loud. And really, it's a big thinker news magazine is what we'll call this. And it's really where we look at the big picture issues of our lifetimes. And there are so many of these that we need to be taken on here. So it's an idea to dive deeper into a topic over the course of an hour and really come down. And there are so many topics we want to bring to light on this format, this news magazine right here. And, you know, again, when you're hearing the brilliance and the expertise of people like Dennis Santiago, Colonel Jim Warshuk, and all of our family of experts and really fascinating people we have on the platform, you can just imagine, friends, the topics that we're going to take on and the kind of conversations we're going to have here on this program. So, again, that's what this is. So, right now, this program airs 7 p.m. Sunday evening for the moment as we do these feature shows. So when I say feature shows, these will be on various topics and ideas and thoughts we'll take on from time to time over the next couple of months prior to this show officially launching in its place and home at America Out Loud. So what I want to ask you for is your feedback. And I want to give you an email address right now, talk@americaoutloud.com. talk@americaoutloud.com. Now listen, do me a favor, share your opinions and your thoughts. Let us know what you think about this. What do you think of this format? What do you think of this style? We need to have your feedback so we can plan accordingly when we launch this thing this fall. So I want to invite you right there to tell us what you think about this. And we appreciate you tuning in here today. And again, this goes to all of the podcast networks worldwide Sunday evening as well, so you can hear it on demand at your leisure as well, friends. We'll be back with more Viewpoint Presents with Colonel Jim Warshuk and Dennis Santiago just after this pause.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutLoud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. All right, so as we join you back here, many people are very critical of the United States right now as being overly nationalistic under President Trump. And I want to ask you, Colonel Warshuk, before I get into the European Union and some of these other comments and thoughts that we want to uncover today, I want you to speak to that criticism a moment there. Really, and again, a lot of it kind of comes back to what you pointed out a bit ago, Colonel, which was that, well, if you look at the last 4 or 5 administrations, Malcolm, I mean, basically, there was a trajectory of the nation, and Trump has sort of been a disruptor now. He's taken the nation and turned it on its head and spun it. Well, the problem with that, Colonel, is that the elites don't like it. The people who were controlling the empire are not happy. they're not happy with this president. And so often he is called a buffoon. He is called all kinds of names. In fact, in his trip to the UK this past week, they had big balloons of him in diapers and other things that the London Mayor Khan had approved. Because again, he has not had a good relationship with this mayor of London, obviously. And so he's kind of looked at and ridiculed on the world stage a little bit. And a lot of people were in the streets protesting in the UK. I want to touch on that as well. But talk to me about this overly, many people would say, nationalistic approach that President Trump has had. Is this a primary concern, do you think? Is it valid? And why? And the other follow-up to that, Jim, is should the United States be more global thinking? Should we be more for globalism?
Well, that's a really good point, Malcolm. And what you're seeing here, and you've seen the terms that the political left and the mainstream media and the Democrats and even establishment Republicans have used to describe what Trump is doing. You know, they've reached so far as calling it fascism. They've called him a Nazi, that this is akin to what we saw in Germany and in Europe and in the mid-1930s and 40s, and they're doing that as a way of denigrating what Trump is doing. They're basically just pushing their typical false narrative, fake news, to describe what's really going on. They really know what's going on. They understand that Trump is pushing us back to a more patriotic, nationalistic standpoint to get us out of this globalist mentality so that we are a nation that is for itself, promotes its interests, is self-governance over both our sovereignty and our homeland. These are all the things that globalists don't want. This is why they want open borders. This is why they don't. They want any other nation in the world to have a say in our politics. It's why Barack Obama said, it's about time we take a second seat to the world and let somebody else be in charge. Everything Trump is doing is what any other president in most countries in the world would do. The president of Belize would look at what is best for his country. The same thing that Donald Trump is doing. He's grabbing the reins back and saying, we're taking charge of ourselves. We are going to be in charge of our destiny, and we are going to be a leader in the world, because the world is a dangerous place and somebody has to lead in the appropriate manner. And he sees the United States as doing that. And the world knows that. The world always comes to the United States when there's a problem. They understand 200 years of American leadership, and certainly 150 years now since the United States has promoted itself around the world. The world sees that. The United States has done more for the safety and security of the world using our own blood and treasure. The world knows that. Leaders know that. The political left are Marxist enemies, are jihadist enemies, all don't want that. And that globalist envelope that they want to put us in is their rationale for doing this. And Trump has said, no more, we're going back to, as we talked about, American exceptionalism and self-governance and doing what's right. And so it's pushback. Just like anything else, as you said, they called Trump a buffoon. Well, they're calling his form of the role of America in the world Nazism, fascism, and it's just a bad way of describing what the real truth is.
Yeah, Donald Trump is such a unique character for the time and place of where we find ourselves. When you think about it, Jim, as you pick up on, what you're saying here, it really is truly amazing that he has been elected to high office at this time and place. And when I say that, take a look at what's going on around the world right now with migration, the migration throughout Europe and through the states here, from Central America and throughout, that area into the Northern America to the United States. And we're having the same challenges that Europe is having. And now you see the European Union. It seems to be coming apart here at the seams at the moment here. Prime Minister Theresa May, in her effort to deal with Brexit, Her government seems to be in crisis mode over the past couple of weeks here, and in trying to do a soft Brexit and trying to pansy to a lot of the people. Of course, the people of the UK had already voted on this, but the Prime Minister doesn't seem to be taking it serious enough. I want to talk a moment about the European Union, and then we'll fit NATO into all of this, but migration as a whole. It seems to me there's a leveling of the playing field that's happening right now. When I say a level of the playing field, I mean, if you look back in history and you look back at the 18th, 19th, and 20th centuries, what took place in Europe and what took place in the United States, which is really where we find ourselves right now, a lot of the things that happened back then, the migrations of that era were based upon really people that were trying to escape from a totalitarian or other form of oppression to a kind of a new opportunity, if you will, a new land of some sort, opportunity, freedom, sort of what America is, the hope and the glow of the world, what people are seeking. So, you know, refugees seeking refuge in the same way that the European Union has been battling this with open borders, no borders, things that people like Chancellor Angela Merkel has come under fire for, and she almost lost her government in the past 30 days. Dennis, mm-hmm. I'm seeing some really interesting things happening on the world stage right now with people like Angela Merkel. I'm going to guess now, and I don't know if you gentlemen agree with this or not, but you take like the Angela Merkels, you take like the Theresa Mays, and you take a look around the globe right now, even President Erdogan in Turkey, for instance. I think if you look ahead, even 5 years from now, are any of these players still on the world stage, or have they all been replaced?
I think you're going to see replacement. Interestingly enough, the harbinger of that, mm-hmm. There's a concept called multipolarity,
okay.
Right? Which is that the world has changed from being a bipolar world where you had, you know, the U.S. Soviet Union, or you know the Allies versus the Axis, mm-hmm. that type of relationship, and so there's this new concept called multipolarity where you have all these players that don't agree with each other, and none of them seem to know how to interact with each other, driven by whatever factors. And interestingly enough, the guy that talks about this the most is a fellow by the name of Klaus Schwab, who happens to be the chairman of something called the World Economic Forum, mm-hmm. you know, Davos, Switzerland, which is where globalism kind of lives when all is said and done. Now, his observation on all of this, particularly when it comes to migrations, is that, and he's a European, so he looks at it and goes like, you know, the Europeans have gone down this path of basically self-extinguishing their own societies. You know, they're zero population growth or less. Right. So they're running out of people and their societies are aging. And so you got their governments going like, what do we do? What do we do? You know, so the traditional thing is you import serfs. And in olden times, when you had real empires, what they would do is they would go conquer lands and then, you know, kill all the men, capture all the women and children, take them back home and, you know, use them to like do the work. Mm-hmm. You can't do that anymore. But so the substitute for that these days is, you know, you find places where there are wars and then you open doors and channels for them to come in and then you take what you can get. It's tumultuous, right?
Hmm.
It's happening in Europe. And in essence, it's it's kind of an unorganized invasion of the Moors, which, you know, Europe went through in the past when you really think about it. You know, that was the last time the shape of the crescent really was a cloud over most of Europe was during that time. But now that was an organized assault, right? Now it's this disorganized thing where they've let people in themselves. And I don't think the Europeans really understood exactly how tumultuous that was going to be to their own societies, because like most societies, you know, we look at each other kind of in the mirror, right? You know, Americans, we recognize only the culture that we have to ourselves. The Europeans are exactly the same way. Mm-hmm. We're myopic. And so you think everybody else on the planet is just like you. Nothing could be further from the truth, right? People in other parts of this planet are not like people like in any place else. And that's kind of the whole multipolarity problem. Now you've got the issue where who are going to be the polar leaders that will form the next matrix. It's not going to look like the matrix that was there before. And in order for that to happen, you're going to have to replace old leadership with new leadership that can think in the matrix of how the new world order actually works. Not because we designed it, which is an elitist thing, but because the reality on the ground says this is what we have to deal with because of whatever mistakes we did or didn't do. And that ultimately means that these leaders that carry with them the baggage of old ways of doing things, you know, we saw it. The phenomenon and the lead in that is a phenomenon in the United States where we've had a significant change in philosophical direction. And you're seeing it in the European Union as a whole, and that what they're actually going through is they have a change in philosophical direction. Not, you know, you just don't watch Germany and France and England. You also watch Poland and Hungary and these guys. They have very different philosophies from their Western European members of the same union. It's kind of like the United States having like, different parts of the country having very vastly different opinions. Interestingly enough, you know, the Western Europeans are aghast at the Eastern Europeans because the Eastern Europeans are trying to put this thing into place in their countries for their own safety and security that emulates something in the United States called the Second Amendment. So it's, you know, this stuff is happening out there.
Well, many of the countries
are going to get changed for it. Yeah.
Many of the countries you're referencing are really, I mean, again, back to the West, Dennis, are really socialist type countries. When you take a look at a lot of these countries, they run socialist governments.
Well, the Eastern ones are what I'd call more failed communist experiments.
Sure.
So, you know, they're kind of like, you know, in a backlash from it. So they tend to be more American-like.
And Dennis is spot on this, because you're seeing this in Hungary, in the Czech Republic, as he said, in Poland, and now we're even seeing it in Italy, where there's the backlash and pushback against this refugee situation. The former Eastern Soviet bloc countries, who have lived under repression for 70-plus years under the Soviet Union, want no part of this. They're building walls, they're putting up fences, and they're not bringing in refugees because they don't want a part of this. They see what's going on in the more socialist countries of France and Germany and England, of what it's doing to these countries both socially and their economies, and they're not having any part of it, and they're almost adopting what they're seeing from Donald Trump.
And more important, because they're pushing these people through and making them go through their countries to get to the Western European countries. You know what they're acting like? They're acting like Mexico with regards to all the turmoil going on in Central and South America. Yeah.
Well, and a lot of what we're talking about right now is why I think President Trump gained power and rose to power is this whole, I mean, remember, his biggest campaign moment, his speech, was really about that wall on the southern border and was all about migration and how it wasn't. He's seen things that other people were not seeing, and he's seen the impact of it. Now, he came out just this past couple of weeks here, or this past week, and talked about that Europe is making a mistake. He was very vocal on the fact that Europe was making a mistake. He talked about Angela Merkel and the Chancellor of Germany, and that she had made a mistake, and he's been very critical of the Chancellor. But he also came out and sort of poo-pooed Theresa May as well for doing a soft Brexit and not embracing what the citizens there had approved already. Back to what I asked you a bit ago here, are these players in jeopardy here? Colonel, what do you think about, we take Angela Merkel, Theresa May, a couple of the big figures out there, what happens, and a lot of these countries are in economic ruins, by the way, you take a look at Italy and Portugal and many of these countries in Europe, I mean, they're in financial ruins, totally busted. What happens with the European Union, do you think, and with this whole, I mean, UK have a Brexit movement? Does this happen right now? Does Theresa May last 30 more days, do you think?
Based on some of the things that she said after having her discussions with President Trump, I think she may see a little bit of the light and the realization of what's really going on based on what he talked about. And he was very bolstering of her despite his dismay with how she had been handling things. I think she will last 30 days, but, you know, she's going to have to rearrange the course that she set, and she's going to have to address it from the standpoint of what the Brits wanted when they first voted on Brexit, and that will be the telltale. I think if that happens, that could be once again a domino effect for other European countries to take a look at that. Certainly, Macron in France may see the light as well. He admires Donald Trump from a standpoint of his approach to things, and I think he wants to try to emulate that. Of course, he's going to have to change. Things will have to change more within the French government and the mindset.
Yeah.
But I think there will be sort of a new way of looking things, and Germany will certainly be key. What happens with Merkel, how well she stands up to what's going on in her country, because Germany is really a wreck. The other thing to look at, and I heard this when I was served in NATO, and this doesn't go back that far, talking to a lot of the European military, the European military did not like the European Union. The European Union used to have this thing called the Eurocorps, which was the European Union version of NATO minus the United States and Britain, which they kind of relished because they didn't like to be told what to do, even though they understood U.S. leadership when it came to military efforts. U.S. leadership was by far greater than anything else that anything could have been put forward in Europe.
Oh,
but they didn't like the idea. Yeah, exactly. But they respected it, and I can tell you the Europeans, they may not pay a lot of money, but they like the idea of the United States being in charge. It makes it that much easier for them. Let the U.S. do the heavy lifting and the burden, and the benefit to the United States, and this certainly I see it as something Trump would like, is we'll do it the way we want. Trump just wants them to pay up more. Trump still wants the U.S. The U.S. is really the real leader in NATO. Everyone else just stands around and does what the U.S. says to do. And they like it that way, and I don't think you'll see a challenge. But I think this may set a precedence for perhaps the collapse of the European Union, because really it's just a expanded socialist entity that serves it doesn't really serve a purpose. And if these countries can get back to some semblance of sovereignty, it might be better for them in the long run.
Well, the whole concept of the European Union was to level again the playing field with the United States. It was to join these union nations together and to have more clout, if you will, in a lot of areas. It's funny, they never really did embrace the defense, but they certainly did it for economic reasons, much more. And again, why would they do defense when the United States had their back? The United States was paying their ticket. They really had a free ticket, in fact. And worse off, people... They also had a free ticket for trade. That was amazing. And that was a real aha moment President Trump unveiled over the past many weeks here that he has lifted the curtain on, is how much the American taxpayer has been taken advantage of. Again, friends, it's a whole new world order here as we arrange the chairs here on the Titanic, as we say, yeah? And as we look at the European Union, we look at migration, we look at what's happening here. Really, really interesting. We're going to continue this conversation on globalism versus nationalism. We welcome your comments again, friends, and your feedback on this production, Viewpoint Presents, back at talk@AmericaOutLoud.com. And let us know what you think and how we can make this the very best that it can be. Really appreciate you being here with us, and we'll pause and be back with you in just a moment.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. there haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
You know, when people think of globalism, their first images are that of sort of a utopian world, I'd call it, where everybody is sharing resources, philosophical state of being, the eradication of conflict, poverty, disease, and military aggression is, well, about eliminated. This was the Renaissance philosophy, if you will, the utopian theory of the elite classes, let's call it, okay? Now, contrary to this utopian philosophy, the greatest conflicts in man's history were taking place during the rise and fall of national states in Western world here. Think about it in those terms. And we're talking things like, you know, the colonialism, as I mentioned, slavery, the huge loss of lives in the name of monarchies, religions, divine rights. And the world had changed over those centuries. We find ourselves at another turning point in the world of globalism versus nationalism and where the world is. I want to ask you gentlemen here, and again, joining us back here, Dennis Santiago, Colonel Jim Warshuk is with us here. Can nationalism and globalism survive together in the same country or economic region? Dennis, can they, I mean, think about this a moment. Nationalism and globalism, can they coexist?
They already do. This is a practical world. You have to be national because you have to be able to survive and keep your culture together. And you have to be global because that is the way the world economic system is set up. Most countries already have this duality in them. The trouble that you get is you get people arguing to take that to a utopian level. And, you know,
which is what we're dealing with right now, Dennis. That's the problem.
Exactly.
We're dealing with that right now.
The reality is utopia doesn't exist, right? You know, the only place utopia exists is on the internet. And, you know, it's not real, okay? You know, these are ideas in people's heads that they can come up with. They're really, really great for writing PhD and postdoctorate and fellowship studies. But in the real world, you know, it's like, I really need to make sure that the lights in my town are on. And that basically means I need to make sure the power company gets this really big transformer that comes from China, because that's the only place that makes those things anymore, okay? And you know what? You just got to be practical about it. There is no choice about learning to live with the duality of a global world and national interest. Anybody that says that they can figure out a way otherwise is, you know, they're on crack.
All right, let's dive back into the migration problem we're having back here in the United States and what we see here happening on the southern border. And again, back to what Donald Trump ran on and this fight between nationalism and globalism. Now, Dennis, you say they're existing already. Well, sure, but are they existing successfully? Because right now there's a fight in the union here between a really globalistic viewpoint, if you will, and a national viewpoint. And that's why we've got such odds here with the MAGA movement, President Trump, and where President Obama was before. A lot of the decisions and the movement that President Trump is doing right now, many would say, is disassembling the legacy of President Barack Obama and what he tried to accomplish. You know, there are a lot of people, believe it or not, Colonel, who still believe that Barack Obama was a very successful president. And they deem President Trump as not just a disruptor, but as a hate monger and a guy that is changing the country not for the best. They prefer a more globalistic viewpoint of the nation and really don't want America out there in the front as Trump is doing. Trump is walking a tightrope right now between nationalism and globalism, as we just stated. Can it be done? Well, he's doing it,
in a very unique way, but he's not keeping everybody happy with this. Right now, there are major talks for his impeachment. There are people pushing hard to get him out of office. There are many people who say his life could even be in jeopardy, Colonel. So what do you say, with how does Trump handle this ahead with this movement of globalism versus nationalism, where he's trying to bring more national pride back, more of that back into the States here? Is he successful with this in the end?
Well, absolutely he's going to be successful in the end. One, he's the kind of person who strives for success and doesn't give up on it. The other thing is, those people who you talked about who still believe that Obama was a successful president are the same people Dennis talked about who believes that utopia exists and can be achieved.
Exactly.
It's just not going to happen. And if they're looking for globalism, looking at globalism as a leap to get to that, they can write all the theory papers they want, but it's still not going to happen. And I think, as we're seeing in, you know, we talked about Eastern Europe, those economies in the former Soviet Union are just soaring. Those countries are doing great.
Far better than Russia's even doing.
Far better than Russia, far better than the Western European states, and they're beginning to look at these countries and say, what are they doing right? And then what they're doing right is they've embraced market capitalism and they're using it. There's going to be a degree of globalism when it comes to trade and world commerce, but I think it's going to be more market oriented rather than what we've seen or they've tried to do over the last 15-20 years, because that hasn't helped a lot of people. It's been great for corporations, but it doesn't do a lot for countries as a whole. When you look at who benefits the most, it's the big corporations that benefited the most, with very little going to the countries that tried to grasp that. So I think what Trump is trying to do is say, let's get back to basics. Let's get back to the fundamental approaches of capitalism and free and the free market. Mm-hmm. And that automatically puts money and success back into the hands of the average person. And I think people are coming to that realization, and his popularity is increasing. And it's not because he's saying things, it's because he's doing things. And it's the doing and getting things accomplished that's resonating with people, and people are coming to the realization he's changing the mindset of people. He's changing just the basic way of thinking and getting it back to what made America great: hard work, ingenuity, independence, and freedom. And that's what he's selling, and that's what's resonating.
Yeah. And you know, it doesn't really matter whether you like the guy or not. You know, the real question,
easy
you
for
to
you
ask,
to say, Dennis.
No, I mean, look, the real it is easier for me, because, you know, I think out of the box, right? The real question that you have to ask is this guy mm-hmm. positioned with the right skills for what comes next? Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've already discovered, right, what's going on. The real thread inside the European Union is that you've got all these smaller countries that are worried about the bigger countries, and they need somebody to keep those bigger countries on track so that the Europe doesn't descend into some morass. You know, they love hitting each other over the head with sticks over there. Mm-hmm. They've got centuries of history doing it. And you've got these countries that are coming up. You know, they're making their contributions to defense because they see it. And so who's gonna moderate the big guys with the big money that they're not quite so sure of in that matrix? Well, you know, they're calling on the United States. You know, in the end, right? There's a saying that I like to tell people: it doesn't matter what God you pray for when your life is in danger, you pray for the same thing. You pray that the stars and stripes show up, man. Well, just is.
But yet, there seems to be a fight for those stars and stripes right now, Dennis. I mean, that's a great way to put it there. The fight, I mean, listen, you take a look at patriotism, you take a look at what's happened with even something as simple as the NFL, the National Football League, and you look at the fight for patriotism within that league, and the idea of racial injustice, and people that were kneeling because they had a social program, they wanted to be heard. Yeah. Maybe they picked the wrong venue, the wrong place, the wrong time, but there is this unrest out there. Back to the Stars and Stripes. It almost has become reverse psychology when you embrace the... I'll give you an example, Dennis. Just about, maybe about 2-3 weeks ago here, there was a picture that went viral of the president in a recent photo now where he hugged the American flag. And I remember seeing various stories and op-eds come out on this saying, how dare the president? He's probably... In fact, the comments were... The first president in our history, or they documented it as such, that would absolutely embrace a flag that way. Why would he do that? In other words, they were very critical of the president and why he would touch the flag in such a manner. And no other president has done that before. And who the hell does this president think he is? So,
you know what I did? I posted a picture on Instagram of me hugging a flag. Right? It's okay. Yeah. But, I mean, you know, think about it, Malcolm.
What did you hug, Jim?
I hugged the flag the same way, but you know.
There you go. Yeah, look, there's stuff that's coming. We talk about Europe now. We talk about Russia. We talk about China. We talk about Korea.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. But in our own backyard, there are challenges coming to the American hemisphere.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, the biggest one that I worry about right now, there's a new president in Mexico. Right? Mm-hmm. He's a Marxist. You know what Marxists tend to do? They try to drive people off the land to change the way things work in their country. You know, we kind of saw the same thing happen in Venezuela. It went disastrously. You think, you know, think to yourself, what happens if things go wrong in Mexico and real refugees, real persecuted people start to show up on our border? Think about that one.
Yeah.
Who do you think has the mindset to figure out how to handle that effectively?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the future that we have to be thinking about. It's not what we know today. Mm-hmm. The world pivots dramatically in ways that we cannot even anticipate. You don't want a guy that doesn't know how to act. You don't want a guy that can be outmaneuvered. Barack Obama tried to solve tariffs. He got outmaneuvered his entire presidency by other countries, mm-hmm. frustrated the daylights out of him.
Yeah.
Trump comes in, he's outmaneuvering them. You know, with what's going to happen in the world next, I'd kind of like a guy that knows how to run the free range.
Yeah, which we're seeing right now. I just made a footnote, by the way, Dennis, when you say, and I this has got to be a future show topic we do on this show, challenges that are coming to America. I like what that means. In other words, you know, we need to address that, you know what I mean, ahead and talk about those challenges that are coming to America. So we should do that. Listen, in the next few moments we have, gentlemen, I want to do what I call a crystal ball moment. So I want you both to take your crystal balls out, if you will, please, okay? And let's have a crystal ball moment. And I want to ask you here, Colonel, I want to start with you here. Where do you see all of this confrontation, the political division, the protesting, and the factionalism that is... Where's it taken the United States? Seriously, in your opinion, is it more towards globalism, a global view, or nationalism? And what will that look like ahead?
Well, I think as the United States sees what's going on in Europe, sees what's going on in Mexico, certainly we have the example of Venezuela. I think if Donald Trump gets the message out right, and he's, you know, the man has got a plate full of things to deal with, he will have to present to the United States, and I think this will be a pivotal part of his 2020 re-election effort, is to picture the United States from the direction it was going to where he has turned it around, and you know what he really needs to show is do we want to see this? Do we want to, you know? He needs to chain up pictures of Venezuela. He needs to chain up perhaps what comes about in Mexico, as Dennis referenced, and ask the American people, do you want this, or do you want to go on the new course that I have set for you? Take your pick. That's what Americans have to look at, and they have to decide which direction they want to go. It really comes down to Americans deciding, do you want to be patriotic nationalist conservative, or do you want to go continue down this path of globalism? And if Trump can paint the right picture truthfully and honestly and describe what our fate might be 50, 100 years down the road, that could help set the course for the direction we go.
Boy, that is really well said, Colonel. All right, in our last moment here, Dennis, I want you to take the last word on this crystal ball moment, and I want you to address for me, and we've got about a minute and a half left here, the challenges that you mentioned that are coming to America. And when we talk about, again, back to this big conversation of globalism versus nationalism, what do you think those big challenges are going to be, Dennis?
So, first of all, I don't think we have a choice but to be engaged with the world. It doesn't matter who the president is. You have to, this is just, it's going to be forced upon us. It's going to be forced upon us in the American hemisphere because of what's happening in Central and South America. It's going to be forced upon us in the South China Sea because the world of Asia is pivoting away from the issues of the northern part of Asia into the tropical part of Asia. It's going to challenge us in the world of how do we cooperate with the other multipolar powers in the Middle East, because you know what? They can walk there. We have to take boats and we have to settle that down because it costs the planet about 400,000 bodies a decade to let the turmoil go on there. And, you know, is that really something that we want to continue? Those things we have no choice to deal with. What we do have a choice to deal with is whether or not we can be cohesive about it. That is probably Donald Trump's biggest challenge. How can he make it so that the center of our country finds its strength again and pushes the periphery of our country, which is, you know, fractioned and loud and utopian and imaginary, and bring us back to something that's real that the world can believe in? If he can do that, he'll leave a legacy that probably won't just last his presidency, but will still be here 500 years from now.
You'll hear Dennis Santiago today, Colonel Jim Warshak. Friends, take a look at all of our family of experts. It's our biggest accomplishment back at our platform is our unbelievable, talented, and brilliant analysis, and the folks that we have here on the front lines that are great writers, and they're great commentators, and they're great hosts, and you'll catch them on radio and writing and video and all kinds of things. It is really second to none. It's a very unique platform we have back at AmericaOutloud.com. So I invite you there. It's something different. It definitely is a little different for you, which is why we find people hanging there for probably more time than what they normally would on a platform like ours. Yeah, we're a news platform, but we're also a life platform. We address all the big issues that are happening. Now, this show, again, Viewpoint Presents, is a sister program of Viewpoint This Sunday, which you hear every Sunday at 10 and 6 on America Out Loud Talk Radio. All of our shows, all of our formats go to podcast worldwide, all of the networks. This one does as well. And you'll see these pilot shows. Again, I want your feedback. So I'm going to give you that email address again. Very easy. It's talk@AmericaOutloud.com. That's where you'll be able to email your comments and thoughts back. We'd love to have your feedback, what you liked, what you didn't like, what we can do better, how do we make this excel. This will launch again this fall on America Out Loud. In between time, we'll bring you some of these special features on some of the big topics of the day. That's what this program is all about. Let us dive a little deeper here into the big issues here of the day, friends. I thank you again for joining us here on Viewpoint Presents. To be continued, friends.